And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
My loneliness is killing me. I must confess, I still believe. Still believe when I'm not with you. Lose my mind, give me a sign.
To the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Wednesday, May 19th. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling with the homie, Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody? I got that same skirt we saw in that cold open, or my daughter has a doll that has that skirt. Can't wait to try that.
Oh, awesome. We also got my top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey-yo! The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
And last but not least, making the magic happen, is JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Hashtag full squad. TK, I see you're busy over there clicking away. You're trying to get these Grateful Dead tickets, are you?
Oh, that's right. Sit tight. Securing my verified tickets as we speak. All right. Atlanta show looking good. Skeetsy.
All right. Good for you, man. What a day. What a day. All right. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Smash that like button. Leave your comments. And if you haven't already, come on, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. And make sure you check out yesterday's bonus show, bonus podcast with MSNBC host Chris Hayes. I just finished listening to this one this morning, guys. It was fantastic. Chris Hayes, he's a sicko like us. He's a diehard League Pass NBA fan, and he really knows his stuff. And that's a great conversation that you guys had with him. I know he had to bounce there at the end, didn't he, Tass? But you got a good, 30 to 40 minutes with Chris before he actually had to go work.
Yeah, listen, when you talk to the people who are booking our guests, you kind of have to give them a ballpark. I said 30 minutes, knowing full well, it's going over 30 minutes. Sure. And the PR person should know that as well. And it did. And yeah, so totally fair that he says, I have a job. You know, he had to do a full hour show, 7 hours from that moment. So he was getting on a call, I do believe a production call, where he was talking about real stuff. He wasn't talking about Alexei Pokashevsky's long arms. He's talking about real international relations. So much respect to Chris that he knows so much about basketball.
He does.
While also knowing about, you know, real stuff. So yeah, he was fantastic.
Email us your questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Email them in nodunks@theathletic.com. Tweet them in @nodunksinc. I know I said on Monday, I said earlier this week that we would be stepping on the beach on Wednesday because we usually do, but no beach stepping later today. So you got even more time to get your questions and comments in. And finally, go grab yourself some sweet No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com. Okay, we're going to get to previewing and predicting tonight's two Western Conference play-in games. But first, let's quickly recap last night's action. It shouldn't take all that long. We did have some blowouts, unfortunately, last night. Tass calling that first one with the Pacers-Hornets. Woo, boy, that was over in a hurry. But we'll start with the more entertaining game, even though it was an 18-point victory. Jason Tatum exploding for 50 points as the Celtics defeat the Wizards and claim the seventh seed. So Boston going on to take on the Brooklyn Nets. But Lee, get us started here. Tatum is the big story, of course, from this one. An unbelievable performance, especially in the third quarter there.
Yeah, exactly. At halftime, the Wizards were actually looking pretty good. Beal had a pretty strong second quarter there, and the Wizards took a lead, and it was like, maybe the Wizards can do this. But in the third, Tatum, you say, and of course, Kemba Walker contributed as well. They combined for 32 points, but it was Tatum's 23, and he got what he wanted. The Wizards had absolutely no one to stop him. It was kind of Beal on it. Was Ish Smith on him for a while. And Tatum's like, sweet, I'll take these matchups. When he was open for three, he took those, knocked a couple of those down. If they closed out, he drove inside. He got to the free throw line. He took seven for the quarter, made them all, went 17 for 17 for the game from the free throw line. So practice your free throws, kids. But really, that third quarter, he and the Celtics just picked apart the Wizards' defense, didn't really have a lot of contested shots, and the Wizards kind of hung in there in the fourth, kind of, not really. It was a sort of double-digit lead for most of that quarter, and they just couldn't really get close. They just didn't really have any offense. As I say, Beal was okay, but he didn't look 100%. Westbrook didn't really get it going. Bertans was awful, 0-7 from downtown, and there was just nobody else there. So they, on one end, they didn't have anyone who could really contain Jason Tatum, who looked like a superstar out there and really played a superstar game. And then on the offensive end, I didn't think the Celtics' defense was super great. I just think the Wizards just didn't have enough offense. So in the end, an 18-point win, very, very comfortable win here for the Celtics. And, you know, they're going to feel pretty good. I mean, they face the Nets now, of course, in the first round. But Tatum stood up like a superstar. Just unfortunate these stats don't count for anything, really. So
yeah, what is going on with this decision here by the NBA? So, they don't count as regular season stats. Okay.
Yeah.
Why don't they count as postseason stats? It's very weird. It's just like they're their own thing, I guess. Or they're just lost in space somewhere.
Yeah, I guess
somewhere,
that's on Basketball Reference is going to be a little extra, like play-in games. But a really masterful performance by a superstar, Jason Tatum. You know, the Celtics, again, in that second quarter, started to show signs of vulnerability. I thought Beal was playing really well, but then they just it just evaporated in that third quarter, and that's what superstars do.
Yeah, Tass, a 20-4 run after intermission there by the Celtics, and then they wouldn't, you know, relinquish that lead. It didn't get all that close, and most of it was Tatum, and then it was Kemba there in that third quarter, where it felt like those guys were scoring every single time. I think foul trouble really hurt the Wizards as well. Not that they were really like doing all that great a job of slowing Tatum in the first half. He was getting his still, but Rui Hachimura there picking up his fourth early. And then it was like, well, now who's going to be guarding him? You got Beal struggling through an injury. And then, Bertans getting switched on him. And that was a joke. They just didn't have an answer for him.
That's totally true. It was really unfortunate. I think Scotty Brooks could have changed it up a little bit more rather than just switching everything and allowing Littles guarding him. You just mentioned a couple guys guarding Jason Tatum, who is a monster. You mentioned Ish Smith guarding him. Come on. That can't happen. Raul Neto also coming back from an injury in the starting lineup. That can't happen. It's like the Wizards decided, especially after they were probably roped in a little bit with Jason Tatum's slow start to the game, it's like they just decided, we're getting in a track meet, we're switching everything, whatever the Celtics put up and score, they put up and score, and we're going to try and outscore them on the other end. And with two guys in the starting lineup with the Wizards who didn't do a whole heck of a lot, Alex Len, who... You know, as sort of a placeholder.
Is he playing? This is so stupid. I mean, I know he has a decent couple of games every now and then, but like, Scotty Brooks, come on.
That's a Scotty Brooks throwback right
no
there.
Doubt.
Shout out to Kendrick Perkins playing for no reason back in the 2012 finals. Love to see it, Alex Len. I mean, it's not like you were getting a ton from Daniel Gafford, but I guess Robin Lopez is the guy to go to right there. I don't know. It basically just comes down to the fact that Beal and Westbrook didn't play well enough to win this game, right? And that's the big thing for the Wizards. They have two really, really solid players. Beal was moving pretty well last night, all things considered. But when one guy on the Celtics is going for 50 and you can't really get that from your two stars on the Wizards, that's the deal right there. Westbrook's got to be better if they're going to win their next game.
Yeah, and Westbrook's scoring style is definitely better suited for the regular season when guys aren't willing to put up their bodies on the line and there's help just to stop Westbrook. Like, guys were just getting in his way, and he was trying to rumble through them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the stat line is okay when you see the point total of 20 points, but it took him 18 shots to get there. He's only 6 of 18. I thought it could have been a heck of a lot worse. He got some nice bailout foul calls, and there's the goaltend on Tristan Thompson. But then you say, well, maybe Westbrook should be passing more. Well, Raul Neto just wasn't himself. We're talking about injuries with Bradley Beal. Neto wasn't himself. Alex Len wasn't doing anything out there. Who is Westbrook really going to pass to when Bertans was having a bad game? Yeah, Scotty Brooks had to play his better guys more. Like, I think that was a mistake. I mean, you do have a vet in Robin Lopez to help out. But, yeah, it comes down to... guys making shots. And Bradley Beal, maybe the hamstring got tight at halftime, because that tends to happen with hamstrings. It was the talk on the broadcast yesterday. You sit and you cool down. But the whole team cooled down in the second half. Westbrook desperately needed Beal to score, and Westbrook couldn't do much. He had zero assists in the second half, not one. And then, you're just letting Tatum just go off. That 23-point third quarter was masterful. To put 23 points up in a quarter... That ain't easy. And he was getting whatever switch he wanted. You know, a double, perhaps? Maybe?
Anything?
I think that would help.
Because he's cooking you. And, you know, I know some Wizards fans might be upset with, like, him having those 17 free throw attempts. But Lee, you know, in watching the entire game, I'm like, no, he was aggressive. Like, he attacked. Like, okay, sure, there's one or two where you're like, ah, maybe there's not a lot of contact there. And maybe he's not getting that. But, like, he even said after the game, like, we got them in the bonus early in a lot of these quarters. And so those start racking up, and then you are sort of marching to the free throw line a little bit easier there. But I thought he just did put pressure on either small guys on him or getting a switch like Bertans blowing by him or getting comfortable with a step back and then, like, help coming in the form of Lopez or whoever was the big out there for the Wizards and just, like, not athletic enough to really not foul Tatum at the rim. I thought they were deserved, basically, 17 free throws.
Oh, I didn't have a problem with them as well. I mean, watching back, like you say, there's a couple in the bonus where he just gets hit. He's not shooting, but
right.
That's what happens when you're in the bonus. You get to the free throw line, and he knocked them all in. And again, in that fourth quarter, when, again, it wasn't really close, but he just got a couple more just to keep the Celtics, at a good distance. So that's what veterans do. And Jason Tatum, I mean, you know, he stepped up in big games before. So this is not unexpected, and especially without Jaylen Brown out there, you know, he knew he was going to have to do a lot more. And Kemba Walker, I mean, he's such a pendulum swing, I think, too, for this team. When he's giving them some offense, he didn't shoot all that well. He finished with 29 points, but took 24 shots to get there. But I just think that you've got that support from Kemba, and when he's giving that, you know, Tatum can go out and score his 50, and it just means so much more. So that's a good sign here for the Celtics. I thought overall Kemba was moving pretty well as well, because he's the sort of guy who's obviously struggled a lot this season, certainly in playing back-to-backs. He gets a few days to rest here now before the series starts against the Nets, but they obviously need him to be really, really good in that series to give some offensive support to Tatum. Because outside of that, you've got, you know, Marcus Smart, who we know is capable of scoring, but you're not going to rely on him to put up 20, 25 per game in the playoffs. And then it's like, you know, Neesmith hit a couple of shots last night, so they need their two stars to perform, and they did last night.
Yeah, Tristan Thompson, I thought, played pretty well for the Celtics. You know, we were talking a lot heading into this game about bigs. I mean, we named like six or seven bigs we thought might get some burn. You know, no Taco Fall there, unfortunately. But did see Cornette for a hot minute.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Tristan Thompson, Trey, like 12 and 12. I honestly thought he played really, really well in this, obviously helping them out on the boards and even getting 12 points from Tristan Thompson. You'll take that any day of the week, I think.
12 points from Tristan Thompson in 2021. That's like 20 points from a regular scorer. I was impressed with the way he played because, yeah, Robert Williams was out there for a little bit, but then he was really struggling with his toe. But between Tristan Thompson putting a little pressure on the rim and holding things down defensively and on the glass, and Tatum being an attacker last night, getting to the free throw line 17 times, the Celtics clearly made it a point to live in the lane and to show a little physicality out there, which is something that has been a problem for the Beantown boys for the majority of this season. Last night, that was not the case. Yeah, it was really impressive to see Tristan Thompson step up, have a little bit of a throwback game. I guess 5 years ago, this was Tristan Thompson's prime. He looked good last night. If they're able to get that from him against the Nets coming up in this next series, at least it gives you a little bit of hope that they can steal a game or two against Brooklyn.
Yeah, and thank God for Tatum going for 50 tasks, because otherwise this was a bit of an ugly game. I mean, the sound was way off on the TNT broadcast, so we had Marv struggling, trying to keep track of who's who. That's sort of nothing new right now. And just like both teams missing a ton of shots. Like, the Wizards did get looks, I thought. I thought they were getting better looks in the first quarter and half especially, and like, you know, they had the lead, but they were not capitalizing. They should have been up, in all honesty, by 10, 15, 20 points, but they couldn't hit anything. It just had a summer league feel to me. We had Ish Smith going crazy, too. Maybe that's a part of it. I don't know.
It was awesome.
A weird-ass game.
Yeah, it starts with the technical difficulties.
Yeah.
You know, the everybody working remotely didn't sound good.
No.
You know, that's kind of bothersome. But, yeah, the second half, the Celtics really picked it up, and yeah, everything was sort of telegraphed for the Wizards. They do play ugly, but, you know, you kind of knew what was coming with the Wizards. Westbrook was going to bring it down, and, you know, there was going to be a one-pass shot happening for the Wizards. I found it hard to just not have a better defensive plan watching it for Tatum. You know, watching Beal, who's moving all right, but at the same time, if he doesn't have his hammies, he doesn't have his legs, and he's still giving up, 4 inches or whatever he's giving up. It's impossible to guard him, and it's impossible to guard him. And then the 50 burger comes, and it was fun to watch, sure, but it just felt like the inevitable ending of Westbrook and the Wizards' run, and whatever happens in game number two there on Thursday, it's going to end at some point pretty soon for them. It was ugly. It wasn't pleasant in any way, shape, or form. I thought the Wizards just had to play their better players a little bit more. We just talked about Chris Hayes being a sicko. I mean, I'm a bit of a Robin Lopez sicko. Like, I love Phoenix and Portland. Robin Lopez, like, play him a lot. Play him. I mean, he's good.
Right. He's better than Alex Len. That's for sure.
Yes. Yes, and Daniel Gafford's a perfect backup, a perfect change of pace big. But then Alex Len, I'm a sicko. I used to love Alex Len. Any guy who's played for Mike Fratello on the Ukrainian team, I'm happy to support. But man, he's just not adding a lot. When Robin Lopez is a capable dude, he's a capable sport guy. Like this is a win or go to the other game type of situation, the double elimination game. I think he should have played more just to help out Westbrook, because Neto. You made a big risk. You put two guys in the starting lineup, Neto being hurt, Len not adding a lot, and they couldn't support.
Well, what about the conspiracy going around? People wearing the tinfoil hats saying, the Wizards threw this game, Lele. They don't want to play the Brooklyn Nets. They think they like their chances beating the Pacers team, who we're going to get to, obviously took care of the Hornets, and then get in there as the 8 seed and take on the Sixers. This was all part of Scottie Brooks and Westbrook's plan here, I guess. You buying that at all or no?
Nah.
No?
Okay. Nah. Once you play, you try to win. And again, I thought in that second quarter, I thought the Wizards are just looking like, again, driving inside, getting inside, because the Celtics don't have a great interior defensive presence either. But in that third quarter, it was really put on your big boy pants. And Jason Tatum did. And, you were sort of waiting for a response from the Wizards. And it just didn't really come. Whether or not that was on the defensive end, or if it was like, okay. And again, like Davis Bertans, he's a frustrating player, because we've seen those games, where he hits like 3 or 4 in a row. He just flings the ball at the rim and it goes in. But in a playoff type game, he was just clunking everything.
He was missing by a mile.
That one on the baseline that he hit, it was like, from like 10 feet away. Yeah. I don't think his left hand touched it. Like he caught it in one motion. It was sweet.
It was his only make.
That was it. Yeah, he didn't hit a three at all. So, but I mean, that's the way he plays. So he didn't change his style. But man, the spotlight of it just looks so awful. I think, considering what the stakes were last night. So, because they'll be at home. Yes, they'll be at home for their next game. So maybe he can fire up. But again, if you're relying on Bertans to get you through, it's extremely risky strategy.
Yeah. We'll talk about the Pacers here in a second, and we'll save actually getting to the prediction of whether or not the Celtics can, pull off a miracle beating the Nets, how many games they could take from them. But JD, if you want to throw it up, we do know Saturday's playoff schedule. This is locked in. These are the 4 teams. And again, we're going to do our predictions for all of these playoff matchups. Likely there on Thursday night. Remember, guys, we're going at night on Thursday and Friday for the rest of the week here after the play-in games. But got Miami-Milwaukee getting everything started. The 2 p.m. Eastern tip there, or maybe it goes a little bit later. They got a pregame show. Who knows? They always get us with that. And we got Dallas Clippers, Boston-Brooklyn, there it is, on ABC, and then Portland-Denver. I mean, that's a damn good-looking schedule, if I'm being honest there, to start the playoffs up. So that starts on this Saturday, May 22nd. But again, we'll get to predicting and previewing all those series a little bit later in the week.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect for
real. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. That would make me so happy. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything, really. It really is. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, if that's a 10-minute low-impact class, they got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear, you know, a 30-minute live DJ ride. DJ John Michael, that guy plays the hits. He always gets me going. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or Bike Plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
So Washington now flies home. You said it there, Lee, where they're hoping Bertans can hit some shots and Russ is a little more fired up. They're going to face the Pacers on Thursday night for a chance to take on the top-seeded Sixers in round one, because the Pacers throttled the Hornets. Again, Tastradamus was all over this one. Watch. We're all excited for this play-in tournament. This first game is going to be a snooze fest. And it was. I mean, right from the jump. 144 to 117 was the final score. So the Pacers stay alive, and they will take on the Wizards in Washington, trying to get that 8 seed. But TK, we had something special happening in this game. And what other notes do you have from this blowout by the Pacers?
Oh, yeah. Big numbers for the Pacers. Big numbers for Domantas Sabonis. Can't believe it happened in the very first play-in game. A prime cut of play-in beef. JD, roll that beautiful beef footage.
Domantas Sabonis had 21 rebounds. Where's the beef?
No dunks. We love roast beef.
Which is lost to the netherworld.
Oh no!
We had a beef problem last night! For an entire season, we've been joking about where do these play-in tournament stats live? Are they regular season stats? Are they postseason stats? Even the Pacers put up a meme about it yesterday. Yep. So I went to check in on this beef from Domantas Sabonis. The stats are nowhere to be found. The clips are nowhere because the NBA themselves doesn't know where to put these stats. They're kind of tucked away underneath a preseason tab, I guess, because these games are just a little bit different. I don't know where they are, but Sabonis was legitimately great last night. Just unfortunate we couldn't source the beef.
Wow. This is great. I'm happy for him. I mean, he had a triple-double almost. 14 points, 21 boards, 9 assists, but no beef highlights. I mean, I get excited for these rebound highlights now lately, and they're gone. They don't even. I don't even think they happened.
Maybe not. Maybe that's it. The NBA. It's funny though. They haven't sort of made a decision on what it is, because it's not regular season, is it? But anyway, this game was disgusting. The Hornets were completely not ready at all from the tip. That first quarter, it was either Dougie knocking in threes or they just drove inside, and there was no defense at all from the Hornets. And I think it's an inexperienced thing. I think, you know, I mean, James Borrego, obviously they had a strategy there to sort of pack the paint and try to make it tough. And the Pacers are like, okay, great, we'll just shoot the ball. And they did and knocked them all in. And then the Hornets just could not recover at all. They never made this a contest. So very impressive, though, by the Pacers just to come out and pound a team. So maybe the Hornets learned from this, because overall it's been a very good season, I think, for the Hornets. I think they can take a lot of positives out of it going forward. But man, this was just an embarrassing performance from Charlotte from the tip, you know, yeah, to get humiliated like that. And the Pacers were super impressive because a few hours before, Caris LeVert was ruled out, and he obviously won't be able to play in the next game against the Wizards due to health and safety protocols. So that was a huge blow. But yeah. Brogdon did play, of course, and Sabonis, who was questionable, but he played and was dominant. So well done to the Pacers. They were very, very impressive, and the Hornets were the opposite of that.
Yeah, Indiana jumped out to an early 10-point lead in the first 4 minutes, and it was over. They never looked back, really, and Doug McDermott was huge, 16 of his 21 there in the first quarter. Anything to add to this, Tess? I mean, there's not a whole lot to say. We can get into like what the Hornets should do maybe in the offseason here, and you know, even start looking at this Pacers-Wizards breakdown if you want, but yeah, well, what did you think? You called it. You said this was going to happen. You're like, watch, the first game of the play-in, it's going to suck, and then everyone's going to be like, what's the point of the play-in?
I sort of called it after a while. It was. I think the Pacers knew coming to midcourt, there was even pre-tip, there was a Malcolm Brogdon stank eye. Like, he looked over. I think he was looking at LaMelo Ball, but when Malcolm Brogdon is focused and ready to give the stank eye, like, they were at home, obviously. The inexperience did play a part, but they knew they were going to win, I suppose. And Malcolm Brogdon is an experienced guy. He came over to the Pacers to be, you know, a 1A type of guy with whoever they were going to end up having. And, you know, him alongside LeVert and alongside Sabonis, you'd think, you know, would be a solid makeup. And then you lose LeVert. My hot take was going to be when LeVert was out for the game, when I heard he was out, that when the Pacers lost, LeVert cost Nate Bjorkgren his job. It's going to be a really fun take. But yeah, the Pacers came out, and Sabonis wasn't awesome to start the game.
No, not at all.
The real story is that this team was ready to play. So the guys that came out were Doug McDermott, that everybody forgot of. Even when we talked about the game, we didn't mention him. And obviously the Hornets forgot about him. He was getting like baseline out of bounds plays. Like, here you go, bucket. You know, like just getting offensive rebounds. It was so easy for him. And O'Shea Brissett.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, Raptors G League player. He was in the G League this year. He's 10 of 14 in this game. And he got the confidence because they were kicking ass, because you know, everything else was happening in their favor. So O'Shea Brissett, you know, took the shots that were there for him, and he stopped run after run after run in this game when the Hornets were trying to come back. So, you know, up and down the roster, yeah, it was a smoke show. It was absolutely a smoke show. Nate Bjorkman maybe saved his job for another day. I mean, that's for the offseason, but they obviously played for him. They played extremely hard for him, and I wonder if LeVert comes back for Thursday. Has that been determined?
Well, he's in the protocols, right?
Yeah, so 7 to 10 days, they're saying. I know I saw Barkley saying, "What? Why couldn't he, in theory, play? I mean, it'll be like, 48 hours after. Couldn't he do the tests and clear?" But yeah, I think Ernie was saying, no, he's in that full, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I took it was that he's in that full 7 to 10. Day window there, so he will not be playing, which obviously sucks. But yeah, maybe O'Shea Brissett and Doug McDermott can ball out again, because they were awesome. And Brissett, for those that don't know, I mean, yeah, I believe he's from Mississauga, Tess, or did he go to school out there or something like that? But obviously, the Toronto
gotta find
area,
out. I can't
I think
believe
so.
I forgot.
I think so, but
Brissett, the best a man can get, and I don't know where is Brissett from.
Well, he was born in Toronto.
Yeah. I think he did some schooling in Mississauga, but he. For those
he did. St. Aloysius Gonzaga.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. He's pumped up now. This guy wasn't on an NBA team in March. And like, he played in the G League there. But he started over like the last 15 or 16 games and like played himself into a contract, a multi-year deal. Because he was averaging like 13-7 for the Pacers team, who was obviously going through some turmoil, had lost a bunch of guys. So he got an opportunity with no Miles Turner there and some more minutes at the big. Now looks like a reputable NBA player. So good for him. Another Canadian here. And balled out in this one with the 23 points. And he had maybe the highlight, I guess, one of the highlights of the game there off the alley-oop. So threw it down. Good for him.
Awesome.
And yeah, Mississauga boy.
Shopping
there,
at Aaron Mills Town Center for sure.
There you go.
Yeah, no doubt.
There you go.
So. Maybe would make the trek over to square one every once in a while. O'Shea Brissett. Awesome. Good for him.
Lee, who do you like in a Wizards Pacers win and you're in matchup here? Like, where are you leaning right now?
Yeah, I mean, the Wizards are at home, so I think that sort of probably tilted in their favor. But I think the way that the Pacers played last night, they're going to feel very, very good and confident. And of course, I think, how is Bradley Beal going to feel? You know, he got through the game, but they obviously need a much better performance from Russell Westbrook as well. And then they need some contributions from other guys. I guess I've probably got the Wizards maybe a point favorite in this game. But, I mean, if you're the Pacers, like I say, it's all about form and playing well. And they got contributions from other guys. So they will feel pretty good. And, I guess the Wizards, but certainly not.
This guy's flipping a coin.
It's just because of what we saw last night, I would say the Pacers. But, you know, home court does play a factor into it, and you just expect a better response knowing that it's lose and go home from the Wizards. So I've got the Wizards by a point at this stage.
Yeah,
right. Can't play Alex Len all of those minutes against Sabonis. That's got to be a difference, because Sabonis was really why the Pacers won last night. He controlled the game, like you're saying. He didn't have a great game shooting the ball, but that was because they were going out of their way to double team him and take things away, clog the paint. So he was finding wide open shooters, wide open cutters. If Alex Len's going to be running out there, when you got Robin Lopez sitting on the bench, a box out boy, amongst the best in the NBA at putting a body on somebody, he's going to have to play, because Sabonis just can control the game. And if the Wizards are going to be soft inside like they were against the Celtics last night, that's scary hours, because Sabonis had a great game last night. So hopefully not a whole bunch of Alex Len. If you see a lot of Alex Len, that's going to be a win for the Pacers.
Uh-oh. Yeah, okay. No doubt. Sabonis could come in and have a monster game if he sees Alex Len in front of him. I totally agree. That's a huge sway, like right in the first quarter, because they're going to play on the other end. They show that they're ready to scramble if they want to. And like in this game, I mean, they took LaMelo Ball out of this game really because LaMelo Ball needs to play with great players. I think that would really help LaMelo, but helps everybody. But LaMelo is one of those guys that, you know, if he's going to have these driving lanes, it needs to be because he's playing with scorers. So I think Sabonis is going to have a big game. Why is Scottie Brooks going to take Alex Len off the floor? Sabonis is just going to run circles around tomorrow, it feels like.
Sabonis against the Wizards this year, 32 points, 14 rebounds, 9 assists in 3 games, 61% from the field, 3 losses, though, for Indiana.
Yeah, that's right. The Wizards got the best of them. There were some close games, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
definitely won over time.
Because the Pacers allow shots at the rim, which is what the Wizards do. So that's the problem. The Wizards score a ton in the paint. I think they had a game where they had like something ridiculous, like 96 points in the paint against a monster game against the Pacers. So that's the problem.
Didn't Schumann point out, like, I think the Pacers-Wizards played, was it the fastest or the second fastest game, like, you know, in terms of pace, like in the last 25 years or something like that when they previously did? It was like an insane number of possessions
that were in
the game, because there was
Schumann
not a lot of defense. Yeah. Shuman, let us know if you're
don't see him in the streamers this morning.
Okay,
if you are there, Shums, let us know.
Lee, you slipped it in. You think the Hornets had a successful season, obviously, despite, you know, losing this game and are not even going to be playing in the next game for the play-in tournament. They're not making the playoffs. We know that. But you think still having a top 10 record in the East with all the injuries to, like, Gordon Hayward and LaMelo and Bridges there for a time and Devontae Graham for a time, that it was still a successful season overall?
Overall, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the season certainly ended badly. I think they lost their last 6 regular season games and then, you know, obviously embarrassed there last night. But LaMelo Ball is clearly a star player. They got that draft pick right. So he is the focus going forward. They've got him. Gordon Hayward, I think, overall had a decent season. And you know, he, again, the injuries, he's an injury-prone player and he missed a ton of games, which obviously hurt them. But I think there's still something there they can get out of him. And then it's what are they going to do with their backcourt? They've got some star players there, or players with potential. You know, they've got guys like Malik Monk and PJ Washington. I think these guys have got something there. If they draft well again and they can, you know, maybe make a trade or sign someone in free agency, I think there's some positive signs, because they've been a pretty ordinary team for a long time. But now they, I think, have got finally some building blocks there. They need to improve in the middle as well with Zeller and Biombo. Zeller was pretty bad there last night. So they need a big. They need some other pieces. But I think when you just look at LaMelo and the season that he had, I think they should be pretty excited that going forward things are going to get better.
Yeah, what's their number one, you know, thing they need to address, you think, Trey, this offseason? Is it the center position? They need a big?
They need a big guy. They got to upgrade from Zeller and Biombo, exactly like Lee's saying, especially because you assume that LaMelo is going to be playing some pick-and-roll basketball. It would be nice to have a rim runner back at the trade deadline before the Hawks really took off. John Collins was a name that was discussed for the Hornets. I think that could be a nice fit if they're able to get him away from Atlanta. I think he's a restricted free agent, right? So obviously the Hawks could match if they want, and maybe they would want to, considering they're division rivals, and that sometimes plays out. But a player like John Collins, who can get to the rim on some rolls, can help from the perimeter as well, shooting three-pointers, I think he would be a very nice fit alongside LaMelo.
Yeah, Tass, is there any other centers, you know, as we start looking at guys in free agency that you could see maybe the Hornets making a move? Rashawn Holmes is a popular name that is maybe more of a realistic get. I know the Kings do love him too. Nerlens Noel is another possibility. Like having just a big guy that can give you a little something inside, a little bit more than a Biombo and a Zeller or anyone else I'm forgetting. Maybe trading for Miles Turner, for crying out loud. Can he be acquired? I know he's not maybe the rim runner like a Collins, but obviously he's going to help your defensive presence inside.
Yeah, I wonder what they're going to go after, because they're rumored to basically have acquired Marc Gasol before the Raptors did, right? Mm-hmm. But back in 2019. I wonder if MJ up in the press box might want a more of a traditional type of guy. I have no real clue, but it would make more sense what you guys are saying, more of an athletic rim runner for sure. I can't think of it. I don't think Lauri Markkanen would really fit the bill. But, you know, John Collins is similar too. But, you need some more, in my opinion, more of a defensive-minded guy than those guys that we're mentioning. And if you're the Hornets, maybe you just go all in on offense, because basically that's what we're talking about here. If you're running out LaMelo, Hayward, and P.J. Washington and Rozier, maybe you're trying to outscore teams. But I don't know. They could go to somebody who's more of a traditional quarterback on the defensive end, although no one's really coming to mind at this point. I don't think they want Marc Gasol.
No.
I don't think that's happening in 2021.
No, I unfortunately don't think so. They do have, like, their draft picks. They could have up to $20 million, you know, in free agency to play with. They do have to make some decisions on Devontae Graham, restricted free agent. Same with Cody Zeller, whether they want to try and keep him. They've got contract extensions that they can explore with Bridges. You know, do you try and lock him up? He had a great season. I think they're really impressed with what he gave them this year. So maybe they want to. Yeah, exactly. Maybe try and get him under a contract for some more years. And then Terry Rozier is a possibility for a contract extension too. So some moves to be made there by who's in charge there? It's not MJ.
Mitch.
Kupchak. Yeah, Mitch Kupchak. Mitch Cupcake. So he's got some decisions to make. But yeah, I'm with you, Lee. I mean, the Gordon Hayward, like, weren't the Hornets like flirting with the fourth and fifth seed before Gordon Hayward went down at the start of April? Like, and then they fell off. I mean, they fell all the way, of course, to 10th, and then, you know, lose by 40 points to the Pacers, who are missing like maybe three of their best guys or three of their top four guys, with no Warren and Turner and Lamb in the mix and all that, blah, 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 but, or LeVert. So a good season, a weird season, but I guess a building block moving forward. Okay, let's get to tonight's games. Let's preview them and let's predict them. Tass, we'll start with the game everybody's excited for. Let's hope it's a little more entertaining than these two we had last night. But Warriors-Lakers, here it is.
Here it is.
Winning, you're in. Losing, it's okay. You'll take on the winner of the Spurs-Grizzlies. But what are you watching for in a Warriors-Lakers matchup tonight, Tass? 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Have at it.
I am watching for anybody associated with the NBA, their Twitter accounts, how excited they are pregame, because this is exactly what they wanted. Listen, the first thing I'm thinking about is if LeBron James' mind games are going to work on Steph Curry. I'm thinking storylines, because, you know, if you go back to Sunday when Steph was playing the Grizzlies for the 8 seed, essentially, John Morant took to Instagram before the game and said, "Locked in." And that's Steph's line. Yeah, Steph notices. He noticed. He talked about it after the game. He said, "Yeah, of course." He said, "Quote, I see everything." And then he shot up a career high 36 field goal attempts. Unbelievable.
Yeah,
36 shots and 22 of them threes. He scored 46. Now is LeBron's message that he is the MVP of the league? He said that Steph's the MVP of the league for his money. Is that going to backfire? I doubt. I don't know how to play. Schroeder said the same thing yesterday, like something to that effect in pregame media. So I just want to see what kind of stuff comes out. The issue with the Warriors is how are you going to stop LeBron and AD? Like, the Lakers' mm-hmm. size is just, you know, it's a common theme with other teams in the league. But it's up to Wiggins and Bazemore, who has had problems with LeBron before, to stop LeBron. Those are the wings to stop LeBron. And AD is, I don't know who's going to try. Like, obviously, it's Draymond. But man, it takes a village to stop those two, especially with the with the lack of size they have. You know, if Wiggins can really, really have a huge game, it always comes back to Andrew Wiggins. Then maybe the Warriors can take this, but it's up to the shooting of Steph. If Wiggins is locked in, both offensively and defensively, Wiggins is going to have opportunities because they're going to get the ball out of Steph's hands. The Lakers are good at guarding guards. They are good at taking away Damian Lillard. They did it last year in the bubble. They did it against the Rockets and James Harden last year in the bubble. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be up to the wings. It's going to be up to Steph to find the right guys and the other guys to convert. And then on the other end, just frickin' pray that Anthony Davis and LeBron just aren't feeling it. So there's a few things I guess I'm watching.
Yeah, I mean, you see the marquee for this, and it's obviously being promoted, of course. Why wouldn't you, with some of the two best players in the game of Curry versus LeBron? And I think your mind immediately goes like, oh man, this is gonna be a scoring fest, Trey. This is gonna be like 135, 130, 140, whatever. They're gonna be putting up buckets. I don't think it's gonna be that, because these are like elite defensive teams. The Lakers, number one defensive team in the league, despite not having AD and LeBron for good chunks of it. That's amazing. And then the Warriors, or the final 20, when James Wiseman goes out and he goes down and they shift to that smaller, you know, more veteran sort of defensive presence there with Draymond running the show. They were the best defense in the league over these last 20. The Warriors, like, this could be a slogfest because they are great defensive squads here, which could still make for a very exciting game. Don't get me wrong. Like, if we're in the high 90s or even just cracking over 100 and it's tight, then we're going to be all for it. But I think some people, maybe the casual, is like, oh, this is going to be a high-scoring affair. These are great defensive teams, and you know, who's going to come out on top tonight?
Yeah, Skeets, you know I love offense more than anything, but even tonight I'll be defense! Because there's great questions to be asked on both sides. Like, how much can Draymond Green slow down Anthony Davis? That is a huge question for me. If the Warriors are going to be able to keep this close and maybe knock off the Lakers, Draymond has to be special. He considers himself the greatest defender of all time. Let's see it, because Anthony Davis maybe is the toughest matchup in the league. Prime Draymond, maybe the best option to stop him. Draymond, not quite at his prime, but he's been playing pretty well lately. I think the Warriors are planning to single cover him. That way they're not giving up those 4-on-3s. But Davis has a lot of size on Draymond. He's got a lot of skill, obviously, and he's a super athlete. And that's without considering, like Tass is saying, the Lakers have a lot of size at other places. LeBron is a lot bigger than Andrew Wiggins. We'll see which centers they roll with. Maybe it's Marc Gasol. Maybe it's Andre Drummond, just to have a little presence on the glass. But there is an opportunity, no doubt, for the Lakers to pound the dubs on the glass and inside. And for the Lakers, how much are they going to do with Steph Curry? They blitzed Lillard a lot last season. They've got Dennis Schroeder coming back, but he hasn't played in a while, so that's a tough ask for him to stick Steph Curry. Also got KCP, Alex Caruso, a couple of different options and a couple of different looks that they're going to give Curry, but it'll still be interesting to see if they can actually stick with him. So we've got a defensive battle inside for the Warriors. We've got a defensive battle outside for the Lakers. I can't believe I'm talking about defense this much, but these teams are actually great defensively, and they got some highlight defensive players. I'm tapped in. Get down in your stances. Slap that floor. We're going crazy tonight for the defense.
Yeah, Lee, do you believe the Lakers can do a decent enough job of slowing down Steph Curry? They've had success in the past. You know, KCP can do a great job. They've got a great statuary. Like, he just stays attached, and then he, like, trails hard on him. Of course, there's a lot of eyeballs on him, and they're just a great defensive unit. And Caruso's a good defender. You know, he's at least going to give it his all out there and stuff and try and stick with Steph. Or is like, come on, it's Steph. He's gonna go for another 35 shot attempts tonight, probably 20 plus 3-point attempts, because it's their best chance to win. What do you think heading into it?
Yeah, the Warriors need Steph to have one of those just incredible performances. And this is where Draymond has to work just as hard on the offensive end, setting all those picks and finding him there. But the Lakers have just got so many bodies they can just keep on throwing at him. And that's what's going to make it challenging for Steph. I mean, he can get inside as well. He can get whatever shot he wants. But it just feels as though if they don't have any other offensive support like a Wiggins or a Bazemore hitting shots, then it's like the Lakers can kind of say, well, if Steph's going to take 35 or 40 shots, he might score 50 points. But if they're not getting contributions from other guys, right, it's going to make it so much tougher for the Warriors. So, you know, that's a thing. I think that, you know, at his best, yes, but the Warriors and Steph can sort of keep it close. But I just feel the Lakers, looking at that injury report, there is no injuries on that roster. So everyone's kind of fresh. And you can throw, like, KCP, I think, will probably start on Steph. And he's proven to be a pretty good defender. Yeah. You know, he's physical, he's quick, he's got long arms. So that's his first challenge. And then it is, maybe it's a Schroeder, maybe it's a Caruso, who, you know, are just going to give everything to stick as close to him as possible, no matter how many screens the Warriors run to try to get Steph those shots. So there's a lot here. But we have seen Steph obviously have some big games, and he can carry the team. And if he's hitting shots, then that does open up the floor a little bit, and other guys will get opportunities. But just feels the Lakers have almost timed this perfectly to get everyone fresh and ready for the play-in tournament here. They're at home as well. So I definitely see why the line is a 5.5-point Laker favorite. Wow. Last I saw. So I think that's a fair one, because I just think, as good as Steph and Draymond are, they don't have much else outside of those guys that they can rely on.
Yeah, again, credit a lot of the times to the Lakers' defense on Curry, but Curry has always struggled in the Staples Center, too. If you go look at the stats, like, he just cannot shoot in this building compared to every other arena where he lights it up. He really struggles in it. Maybe it's the sight lines in there, Lili. I don't know. Maybe it's the lighting they do. It really,
I think it's only against the Lakers, though, isn't it?
Is it against the Clippers? He's fine? It's the colors, I guess. I believe that CBS Sports' Sam Quinn has how this game is going to unplay correctly. I saw him write that the Warriors are going to win the first quarter of this game because they're just going to pick and roll the Lakers centers to death, and Curry's just going to start out on fire. And that is, like, we're talking like the bigs there for the Lakers. You know, this is when AD's not at five. But then at some point, Lakers are going to switch to AD at five, and then order will be restored. I could see that going that way. But I would watch, if that happens, for Kerr to then stop, like, using Draymond as the screen action and have it switch it up and go Bazemore and Wiggins, so then Curry is, like, attacking, you know, be it a Kuzma or some other sort of wing there on the Lakers player, and maybe has a little more space to operate with and attack. I think that's something that Kerr could sort of counter with there, because, you know, at some point, in theory, AD will be playing the five, and that will always be better for the Lakers instead of some of their slow-moving other centers, who are good, and Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell. Okay, offensively, he's great. Defensively, not as much. So, yeah, something to watch. Is this Wiggins' championship tonight here? Like, Andrew Wiggins has oddly always played well against LeBron in terms of just putting up numbers, because there's that whole thing that LeBron never, gave a shout-out to Wiggins in the old SI piece, and then he was gone. And there's, like, a revenge factor there, and both being, you know, number one picks in Cleveland. Like, I feel like this is his championship. Like, if Wiggins could come out and just have one monster game and the Warriors could beat the Lakers when a lot of people are picking the Lakers to move on, I don't know, Trey. Like, it's like salvages his at times disappointing career to me. If he could just have a one game, because I can't bet on Wiggins winning you a series, and I can't bet on Jordan Poole winning you a series or Bazemore. They don't need to win a series. They just need to win one game here tonight against the mighty Lakers.
Look, people are going to say, or people are already asking, is this game going to be the highest rated game of the playoffs? It's certainly possible.
Yeah, possible.
Lakers versus Warriors in a sort of do or die game. So yeah, man, if you're Canadian and Andrew Wiggins goes out there and has 30 points, I think that that's a championship. For Canadian fans sure. out there, but only for Canadian fans. I don't think anybody else is going to care. And honestly, if Andrew Wiggins scores 30 points tonight, the Lakers will probably be thrilled, because it means they're trapping Steph Curry, and Steph Curry's having to pass it to Andrew Wiggins all the time, and the Lakers will take their chances
true.
For that.
It's true.
Yeah. I kind of want to see the Warriors lose, because I want to see Warriors Jazz in the first round of the playoffs, because I think the Warriors match up kind of all right against the Jazz. I wouldn't mind seeing that first round matchup when the Warriors have their sort of do or die game tonight. They can lose. I love how we can just, you know, play with the terminology here. It's a sort of do or die game. Then they play the winner of Grizzlies Spurs to fight for that eighth seed, and it'd be a rematch if it is the Grizzlies of that Sunday game where mm-hmm. Curry went at Morant, so there's lots of history there.
All right, well, let's, you got any more X factors you want to talk about, Lili, or you want to make your prediction for this bad boy?
I think the Lakers win this game. 5.5 points feels about right to me too. I just feel, you know, Davis has played enough games in the last couple of weeks here to look like he's pretty much close to 100%. LeBron obviously had a little bit of a setback, I think, but we know LeBron, he's just going to go out there and do what he needs. He can afford to lose this game, but this is not like a traditional series game one loss. This is like LeBron just wants to win this game so he can prepare for Sunday's game. So I think the Lakers win this one.
Yeah, LeBron even said as much. He said, I usually use game one as the feel-out game in series, yeah. But I, you know, he basically said, I know I can't do that here in this just one game against the Warriors. So maybe, yeah, he comes in locked in, super locked in. Okay, so you're going Lakers. TK, you're up next. Anything else to add to this game tonight? And then who are you taking?
New X factor is LeBron deciding that it would be even better for his legacy if the Lakers lose tonight. So then he can be the first guy to go from losing in the play-in to winning a championship. Jesus. That is an X factor. But here's another X factor. If the Lakers win, they get 3 days of rest before starting their first round series. I think that means more to the Lakers than anything. So give me the Lakers tonight.
Tass?
I agree. I think they win because LeBron wants to add to the legacy. He would be the first guy to win in a play-in game and then win the championship. So, yeah, why not? I think it bodes well. Lakers, Suns, LeBron versus his old bud. Yeah, I'm already looking forward. Shouldn't do that because you never know with Steph. But, yeah, I think they do want the rest, and I think they're ready.
I'm going to swerve on this one because, again, if this was a seven-game series, there's no way I'm taking the Warriors. But it's this one-game factor. It's this, like, we've seen Curry in March Madness. Like, in a one-game, you know, win and go on when he's with Davidson. Like, this is, we just saw it on Sunday, basically, if you wanted to look at that game as a, sort of to get at least another crack up to the 8 seed there so you could lose. Give me the Warriors. Like, just like, I mean, give me a 50-point. Let me give me a Tatum-like performance from Curry. And then, yeah, you're going to need help. Jordan Poole or Wiggins have to be both really special here tonight. Ooh, that's a hell of a bet to make. But I'm going to start cleaning up the Airbnb on Wiggins Island, make sure the Subway restaurant's in order, you know, get some more staff in, because I am booking on Wiggins continuing to play well for whatever reason against LeBron and having a really good Wiggins game and the Warriors somehow pulling off the what would be, I guess it's fair to say, an upset here tonight, really on the backs of Steph Curry. Give me the Warriors just because you guys are taking the layers, Lakers.
You make a good point. There's another X factor. LeBron never played in a March Madness, so
he's not going to understand the pressure. Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. All right, let's hear from everybody in the stream team. Who are you taking tonight? By how many? Who's your X factor? All that good stuff.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Final game tonight will be the first one, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. It is the Spurs and Grizzlies, a little less fanfare for this one, if we're being completely honest. But Trey, what are you watching for? I'm excited for it. I mean, I like both these teams. Young talent, of course, and Ja Morant's must watch. But what do you got your eye on?
Oh, Spurs-Grizzlies played a famous series many, many moons ago. A legendary upset back in the day. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Shane Battier. But for me, neither of these teams are great three-point shooting teams, so I think it's going to be the battle at the rim that determines the winner tonight. You got Ja Morant. That guy is a driver. He's going to want to run pick and roll. He'll be going up against DeJounte Murray for the most part. That's going to be a tough matchup for Murray and Ja. On the other side, DeMar DeRozan, pretty much in the same scenario. He's a driver as well. He'll be creating a lot going up against Dylan Brooks. Another great matchup. You got a couple of big old former Raptors waiting for those guys at the rim in Valanciunas and Poeltl. The three-point shooting, it's going to be a huge X factor. If either of these teams hits 15 tonight, they're probably going to win. but they're both bottom 10 teams in three-point percentage. So points in the paint is what's going to win this game. The Stars, honestly, really need to perform. That means Ja needs to have a huge game if it's going to be the Grizzlies. DeRozan needs to have a huge game if it's going to be the Spurs, because those are the most reliable buckets on their two teams. The Spurs, they got to make sure they control their turnovers, because the Grizzlies want to get some steals and score in transition. That's an easy bucket for them. Points in the paint, I think, is going to be massive this game. We're going to see some old-school Valanciunas post-ups. I think he's going to play a big part in this game as well. Should be fun. Should be an ugly one as well, I would imagine.
Yeah, Tass, where are you leaning in this Spurs-Grizzlies matchup here?
I'll probably lean with the Spurs. I think they're just going to stay loyal to who they are. It's a bunch of mid-rangers, but a bunch of athletic guys getting to the rim. As Trey said, not a lot of threes happening in this game. You might flick on this game, and the casual fan who is probably joining us on the YouTube stream now, probably tuning in for the play-in games, getting a little amped. Those guys, those types of people who only watch the playoffs, and they'll tune in and say, "What is this? Is this 2007?" I mean, the Memphis Grizzlies are dominant in the paint. That's what they do, and they just love hanging around the mid-range and the rim. Same goes for the Spurs, but there's a ton of athleticism on both sides. So yeah, I think that matchup of DeJounte Murray getting all up in Ja Morant is key. I mean, that's the kind of one-on-one matchup on the perimeter that doesn't happen a lot, but DeJounte Murray can do that. He is that good, that long, and I think that's all Pop is saying to him in his ear, or as the assistant coaches are saying in his ear. Like, that's your job tonight, just to try and stick Ja, try and get in his shorts as much as possible. So that'll be what I'm watching. But there's a ton of athleticism on the court. There's former Big Beef recipient Keldon Johnson in this game. There's a lot of guys who can get up and get after it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a lot of athleticism, a lot of banging, Poeltl and Valanciunas in the lane. Can't wait to get Nate Duncan's take on Jakob Poeltl playing some great rim defense. I mean, there's a lot going on in this game for especially for the diehards.
Lee, I guess we said we were going to continue our weird Terry Rozier, Tim Hardaway bet. Who is going to score more points with me going with Tim Hardaway Jr.? Rozier, of course, out now. So I still get the playoffs. I think we mm-hmm. said that, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, whatever. But you want a double or nothing on tonight's game. Who scores more? I'll take Dylan Brooks. You take Patty Mills.
Oh, I don't know. Dylan Brooks was actually really good against the Warriors.
I know, but Dylan Brooks, he can very easily go 3 for 20. Don't you worry. And Patty Mills, as we know, can catch fire. He's struggled.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah. Why not? Let's have some fun.
We're going to make this game a little juicier, man.
Speaking of that game on Sunday against the Warriors, the Warriors kind of Tony Allen, Ja Morant in that game and said, "You want to shoot three? Shoot him." And he went 1 for 6. And we saw last night, a really inexperienced Hornets team looked inexperienced. And you could sort of look at the Grizzlies and say, apart from Valanciunas, they're also very inexperienced. But in that playing game in Orlando last year, Ja Morant was actually very good. I think he had 38 points, shot the ball pretty well, had a few turnovers, but didn't get overawed by the occasion. Valanciunas was actually very good in that game as well. So if you count that as anything, the Grizzlies aren't afraid. Now, they're at home, but they actually have a worse home record than the Spurs have as a road record this season. It's only by one game, but it just shows that the Spurs can get up for those games. And I think that's where it's key. I think if you look at DeMar DeRozan, he's the vet out there, kind of who's going to play the Jason Tatum role. So get to the free throw line, put some easy baskets on the board, and maybe get one or two of those Grizzly guys in defenders, because in foul trouble. So I think that's where it's key. And so that, I think, sort of, is where the Spurs have to play, is like use the experience of the guys you've got who have been there a little bit more than the guys from the Grizzlies. So it should be close. The Grizzlies won the season series. They won, had more a much better record than the Spurs as well. They're at home. No significant injury right now. Jaren Jackson's been back and he's been playing okay for them as well. So It should be a fun sort of arm wrestle, this game, really.
A fun arm wrestle.
I mean,
we're arm wrestling.
It might not be the prettiest game, but it should be a close game tonight. It really should be, because I sort of don't see either team really just blowing the other team out. So I think it favors the Grizzlies. I think I'd take the Grizzlies too tonight again. Okay. In a close one. I think a 2-point win for the Memphis Grizzlies. I'm putting the line Memphis. I don't know what it is. It's probably about that. I'll say Grizzlies by 2.5 points.
Okay.
So I think they win by three.
I think Memphis wins this game too. I think it'll be close. And I am excited for it. I know many people out there probably are not. But Tass, who are you going with? You're going Spurs?
Nah.
No? Nah, wow, you're talking them all up. Okay.
Yeah, no, I believe in the Grizzlies as well. I believe in the Taylor Jenkins revenge factor against his old head coach, Greg Popovich. Taylor Jenkins, head coach of the Grizzlies, used to be the assistant on Greg Popovich's bench. Oh, I'm just saying things now. I don't believe in that, but I do believe in the Memphis Grizzlies. It will be a very physical game, and I really like the giving of a line with a half point in it. So I totally agree. I think the Memphis Grizzlies win this game by 2.5 points.
Oh, wow. Somehow. That'll be a first. Which will be disappointing if that does somehow happen, Tass, because it won't be in the NBA record books for the first team to ever win by 2.5 points, as we all know. Okay, we all are taking Memphis. What about you, Trey?
Sure, I'll swerve. Why not? According to BetMGM, the Grizzlies are a 4-point favorite right now, but mark me down for Dylan Brooks fouling out tonight. The guy has led the NBA in personal fouls the last two seasons, and he's a wing. That's pretty crazy stuff. DeMar DeRozan getting him with the pump fake tonight 6 different times. Give me San Antonio.
Okay. Ziggy in the stream team says, I think the thumb war is the fun arm wrestle. Well, yeah.
The very end of your arm.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of part of your arm. Is that what you were thinking, Lee? This will be just a fun thumb war tonight between the Spurs and the Grizzlies?
Not really, no. Oh, more okay. Your traditional, what's that movie?
Maybe you meant like an arm, like a fun arm wrestling matchup to you is like one that goes back and forth. Okay.
What was that movie, Over the Top, I think, with Sylvester Stallone? They made a whole movie out of arm wrestling. Yeah. Just crazy, crazy stuff.
Made a whole
stuff.
Meme out of it, too, it turned out. Right? Is that where that meme with the two
Oh,
guys?
That's right, yeah. Is that from Over the Top? Oh, yeah.
I think so.
Two guys uniting.
Unless it's from Predator. It might be from Predator now, I think. But anyway.
They made a whole sports league out of it, too. It's just an arm wrestling league.
Oh, wow.
That was happening.
Who you got?
Yeah, I would say the only not fun arm wrestle is when the arm breaks. That is not fun to watch. Everything else is equally fun in that it's a guy slamming another guy's arm on the ground. Like, it's fine. It's just fine.
In Superman 2, when Ursa got into an arm wrestle with the guy in the bar, it turned into full-out, like, war on the street. So,
That's a fun one. That's a fun one, too.
Okay, they are fact-checking me. I did clarify. It is Predator. It's not from Over the Top. Which you would think it's from Over the Top. Two guys go like this, making a meme, because that's the whole movie. But it is for Predator. All right, good. Well, we got that clarified. Okay, so... Everybody taking Memphis except for Trey. Let's hear your predictions in the stream team and in the YouTube comments below. Let's get to Tweet of the Night, though, brought to you by BetMGM.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter. Yes, well, I wondered if we were going to get through the show without mentioning it, and we didn't, because it comes from the Indiana Pacers. Before the game yesterday, they tweeted this from the American Chopper meme that goes around, and it's like, the play-in tournament does not count as the postseason. That's his son, isn't it, the other guy who's screaming at him? Yeah. It's happening after the season, so what else would you call it? Dad comes back with, the stats from the play-in game aren't recorded as postseason stats. Not done yet. It goes to, well, they aren't regular season stats either, so what are they? Dad finishes with, I have no idea. And I think that sums it up for everybody. No one really knows. No one. Everyone's like, well, it's not the regular season anymore. Yeah, but there's also not in the playoffs, so... What would you put them in? I would put them in the playoffs.
So I think
they're playoffs.
Yeah, I would. I mean, if I have to pick one or the other, I'm putting them in the postseason, not the regular season. But it does seem like the NBA is creating just a complete separate thing. Like, there will be records for play-in games, I guess. Like, Tatum right now has the play-in record.
Most points ever in a play-in game.
Yeah, which is a little weird, but that's what they're going with. Like, I guess they're really... I mean, when they're saying that to me, they're like, "Oh, we're doing the play-in game for a long time. This ain't going anywhere. Like, we're going to be creating a whole new infrastructure on the NBA.com website. We got Schumann working on that right now, so this ain't going anywhere.
Got to update the mainframes." I saw somebody in the stream team suggesting that perhaps the reason that there's not clarification on whether the stats are going into regular season or postseason is that there are a lot of incentives that are tied to like regular season statistics or perhaps postseason statistics. So maybe they hadn't figured it out with the unions and stuff yet, how that's going to be tabulated.
It's possible.
It's very odd, though, that these games just happen and the only thing we care about is the W or the L at the end of it all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty funny that that meme was coming from not just some random NBA fan out there. That's from the Pacers themselves, like an actual NBA team who's playing in the play-in tournament.
Yeah.
Like, they don't even know and are making fun of it. Yeah, it's funny. Sorry, Tyce, what were you going to say?
Well, no, I guess the idea is that you don't want to mess with the historical stats. But I think if you got to choose one, you'd mess with the playoff stats than the regular season stats, because the regular season stats are a little bit higher on the hierarchy, you know? Like, that matters a little bit more. Every team plays the same amount of games. But who knows? I mean, it doesn't really matter a lot. The thing that I found weird this week was Rudy Gobert was given the block title for the regular season, if you guys saw that.
Yeah.
At 2.7 because Miles Turner didn't play in the required amount of games, even though he had 3.4 blocks per game.
Mm-hmm.
But then came out the ruling that even if Miles Turner played in those games to get to that requirement and had 0 blocks in those games, he still would have more than 2.7 of Rudy Gobert. So they gave Miles Turner the block. and that's the way the rule goes, that if you give a guy 0 across the board to get to that threshold, then that determines who gets the league lead in blocks. So he won it, 3.4. Cool story.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you just do totals at that point? Like, why are we, like, if that, like,
why do you need the division
game
part of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good, that's a great question. Rules, man.
Yeah.
Rules for numbers.
What is the all-time record for points scored in a playoff game? Is it still MJ? Does he
69?
Have?
69.
Is it that?
Or 63.
63?
Yeah.
Does anyone have more than that? In a playoff game, obviously.
Yeah, that might be right. Yeah, so
yeah, I think
63,
it is.
Yeah.
Right? In the game against the Celtics.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, Tatum scores 50 last night. Like, who's to say Curry doesn't score 64 points tonight? I just got to know right now, like, does Curry then have the record? Like, I guess not, is what we're getting at. Like, he will not have the postseason record, even though it really feels like a postseason game. He will not have the official record for more points than Michael Jordan in a playoff game. That's weird.
That is very weird.
That's weird. And it's very plausible. I don't even think it's that far-fetched. Like, I mean, okay, I'm not betting that he's going to score 64 tonight, but
he could.
He could. He could. Anyway, very, very weird. Very weird.
Also unbelievable, as Ziggy pointed out in the stream team, American Chopper meme is still going, man. American Chopper, I guess it's back now. It was on from 03 to 2010, but now it's been back since 2018 to present, at least according to Wikipedia. But this is a long-lasting meme for a show that I don't think was, like, the biggest show in the world. I mean, I know there are a lot of American Chopper fans out there. I've watched a ton of episodes, more than I would have ever guessed. But for a meme that's a show that's 10, 12 years old, very long-lasting. You know, we see this more than the Crying Jordan meme now, which I think is an upset, all things considered.
I would add to that, for a meme that has a terrible layout to it, too.
Very long.
Right?
Long
it's meme. It gets condensed. Like, JD had to chop it into two tweets. That was one tweet, of course, the whole thing, the actual meme. But it's like, you know, it's not an aesthetically pleasing layout there for a meme. Yeah, it's held on. Wow. It's very funny.
What about Predator? I mean, that's from 1987, isn't it?
Sure.
The arm wrestling.
Sure, yeah. It's the beauty about memes, man.
Exactly.
They never go away. They are timeless. All right. Guys, let's again hear your predictions for tonight's games in the comments below. We will wrap it up here for a fun Wednesday episode. No beach stepping, as I said, later today. So everybody go back and listen to that fun interview with MSNBC's Chris Hayes from yesterday. You guys did a great job. It was a lot of fun. Check it out if you haven't already.
There's so much politics in it, though. If you don't like politics, don't listen.
Jesus, he's kidding, everybody. I know some of you are like, dislike. There's like not a single word about politics said in this thing. It's all basketball. This guy's a diehard.
In fact, he's politically correct talking about the two New York teams. So there you go. He doesn't take a stance on either one of those. It's great.
All right, well, go check that out. So moving forward here for the rest of the week, I said no beach stepping today, so everybody's got the afternoon off. But we're coming back tomorrow night, Thursday night. There's no morning show. Tomorrow night we'll react to the Pacers-Wizards game, and then we'll preview, I guess very likely, we'll just do the Eastern Conference playoff series there tomorrow night. And then on Friday night, you know, we'll do something similar where we will react to the final game of the West play-in, whoever will be the 8th seed, and then we'll preview the Western Conference 4 playoff series. I know there'll be a tight turnaround because on Saturday there's some of those playoff series, but all you want to know is, like, what team are you taking and how many games? That's all anyone truly cares about. So that's the plan. Thursday and Friday after those final play-in games, we'll jump on YouTube and we'll all hang out and have a drink and preview those playoff series. Sound good, gentlemen?
Mm-hmm.
Good, good, good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Everybody have a great Wednesday afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow night, Thursday night, here with the No Dunks podcast and on YouTube. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, I'm going back to the start of the show. Need to confirm, Trey, tickets confirmed for the Grateful Dead?
It's been a bit of a slog here, Tassie. Oh, no. Tickets confirmed for Atlanta, but the Deadheads all around are having problems getting tickets for the Raleigh show. First show back, everybody was too excited, so gonna have to reconvene here and figure out if we can get some loners.
Oh, so it's gonna take as long to get a Grateful Dead ticket as it takes to hear a Grateful Dead song.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay. I turned on Fire on the Mountain at the start of this show, hoping to lock in my tickets. The solo hasn't even finished yet, Skeets, and I'm waiting for confirmation.
All right.
Grateful Dead, as timeless as the chopper meme.
Brace the day, people.
You could stay.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.